Listen up, fantasy baseball friends. Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real live MLB draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code Felsky. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using the promo code Felsky, F-E-L-S-K-E. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it, they're even offering Hittin' Season listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and play free right now with the promo code Felsky. Void where prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days.
Swing a long drive! There it is! Number 500! The career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith!
Oh, yes! Rollins has won it! They stream out of the dugout! Yeah. Rollins ball near third! This game is over!
It is out of here! 50th home run of the year for Ryan Howard.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Helen.
Knows it. Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 202. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and NumberFire.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Instagram as well. And coming up, we have a trade deadline special. We're going to be talking all about the trade deadline, what the Phillies did, what some of their National League competitors did. We'll look ahead to the waiver trade deadline in August, any possibilities that they could use to improve other areas of the team that they didn't get to this month, and we'll talk about some areas of concern. Did the Phillies get enough to meet their needs here as the calendar closes on July? But joining me to talk about all this is my good friend from The Good Fight, Paul Boyer. You know Paul as he runs the Twitter account for us here at The Good Fight. That is at The Good Fight, and Paul also can be followed on Twitter at Paul_Boyer. Paul, one of our very best writers and a frequent friend of the podcast. Paul, happy trade deadline day, buddy. How are you?
Johnny, baby, cheers. Happy trade deadline to you as well.
You know, it's fun to be buyers again, isn't it?
Oh, man, it's so much more fun. Like, what were we doing for the last 5 years? Like, were we just logging through this day, being like, oh, that's nice for you guys, I guess, and sort of like on the outside of the pane glass window, resting our palm against it, like sobbing in the rain as we look at everybody enjoying their steak dinner and being like, like, where's my nice thing? And now we get to acquire things again, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's I remember, like, the Phillies during the 5 years that they were rebuilding, we were like, you know, Charlie Bucket, you know, watching other kids open all their Wonka bars, you know, watching them all, you know, go to the candy store and fill their bellies with delicious treats. And meanwhile, he's just shuffling through, going home for cabbage water every night. And, you know, and now all of a sudden we found a silver dollar in the street vent, and we're going into the candy store and we're getting some things. And it's kind of cool. That's what the Phillies did here this week. The Phillies on Tuesday made a couple of moves, one bigger move and one smaller move. But we're going to get to all that here in just a second. First, just to kind of set things up, it was a crazy trade deadline day. Jason Stark noted this on Twitter. He counted 15 trades that went down on Tuesday, 22 trades in the last 2 days, and 36 trades in the last week, in the week leading up to the trade deadline. I'm sure there have been deadlines just as busy, but I can't remember one, Paul.
That is tremendous. I mean, obviously you can count on Jason for those sorts of numbers, and that's why he's indispensable.
Yeah, they're good, right?
But yeah, that's amazing. I like something about this afternoon felt, and even last night felt, really kind of electric. You know, like there was something a little bit different from the last couple of years, not having the actual numbers in front of me. I don't know if it's, you know, we had a huge exponential number more than last year or whatever it was. Something in the air just felt different. And I think it ties back to the Phillies being in it, right? Like, as fans of a team that's contending now, we have a stake in all of these things. And it's not just about whether the Phillies get a guy. You look at things like Jake Diekman, right, where he gets traded to Arizona, and you're like, oh, well, yeah, maybe the Phillies could have used him. Or I think his trade actually came a couple minutes after the Phillies picked up Aaron Loop. But you look at that, and you're like, oh, man, like you feel like a little bit of, oh, did we just miss out? And that's been completely missing for the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I felt that way with some of the starting pitchers that went different places. But, you know, I think we were watching a seller's market this year. We saw a lot of teams that – that's one of the things I think you get from so many teams doing a full-scale teardown for a rebuild. And we've seen that's become the trend in baseball. When you've got a team like the Orioles and the Twins and the Rays, you know, these teams that, you know, are playing in these divisions where they're up against super teams. You know, and the Blue Jays, you know, the three teams in the American League East know they don't have a prayer against the Yankees or the Red Sox probably for the next few years. And so they had to clear the shelves, and there were still some things left on the shelves in some of these teams, not for the Rays or the Orioles, but with some of the other teams around baseball. You know, we saw some teams make some, they tried to hold that middle ground. We saw that with the San Francisco Giants and the Washington Nationals, basically trying to have it both ways, you know, stand pat and try and ride it out for 2018. And then you had the buyers, and this time around, like you said, the Phillies were buyers, and they started buying at the end of last week as Drupal Cabrera came over to the team for Franklin Quilome. As Drupal's done okay since he came over, he struggled in the first two games he played in Cincinnati, had a good night last night in Boston. I don't think he has done a whole lot in the second game of the series against the Red Sox, but the Phillies got a guy that will play in the infield, probably play. I think he's going to play a good deal of shortstop, even though he hasn't played there much this year. And I think if he can be passable at shortstop, Paul, it's a great addition for the team because it allows you not to have to move Cesar Hernandez out of the lineup, or it allows you not have to move Carlos Santana out of the lineup. It's your best lineup with Asdrubal Cabrera playing shortstop. And if he can be in there, you've got an 800 OPS guy in the middle of the lineup.
This is a weird, weird roster. It's a really,
it is a weird roster.
Oh my God. It's so strange. I agree with you. I think having Asdrubal Cabrera in the lineup means you have your best lineup out there right now. This guy is having, you know, arguably the best season of anybody short of Rhys Hoskins on the Phillies roster right now. And, you know, plugging him into the lineup, yeah, absolutely. It's a huge plus, especially since, you know, Kingery can't seem to shake his struggles just yet. But we have a I hesitate to even call it redundancy. We do have some players that are a little bit redundant, but not in the super capable way you'd normally hear of that, right? Like you hear of roster construction and you think like, okay, you have a starting player for every infield and outfield position. You have two bench guys dedicated to, you know, being a sub, giving guys that spell usually, you know, whether it's an infield guy, an outfield guy, one of each, backup catcher, blah, blah, blah. You have your usual archetype, right? Then you look at the Phillies. And this has been going on for months now. You have a second baseman playing shortstop. You have a first baseman playing left field. You just traded for a guy who can kind of play any one of three infield positions. You just traded for a catcher who is also a big offensive threat in Wilson Ramos, but who's hurt and whose defensive numbers, again, don't really shake out so great. You have Nick Williams, whose best position is probably left field, playing right field. Mm-hmm. And you're like, how is this team in first place? It's pretty obvious right now that defense is not super high on their list of priorities. They kind of need to worry about, you know, scoring enough runs to stay in games and hope, you know, everybody who follows up behind Nola and Arrieta does their job. But the roster is just so weird. I mean, this is a one-year only kind of thing. We're not going to see this roster, you know, free agency. Yeah. Otherwise, you're not going to see this roster built the way it is carry over into 2019. And it's just going to be an adventure trying to make it work for these last 2 months, I think.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think that's it. You got a lot of guys playing out of position, and a lot of these guys in their first full seasons in the majors kind of learning some of these defensive positions on the fly. Scott Kingery, who I think has actually really kind of solidified himself defensively at shortstop. He's been much better over the last month and a half.
Yes.
You don't see that. He's learned. You can tell that he's learning how to play that position, and he's not nearly the detriment that he was out there. If he was hitting better, I don't think the Phillies would have traded for Asdrubal Cabrera, because defensively, he's been adequate there over the last month and a half. But, you know, it's an overall problem, and you're right. I think, you know, the Phillies realized that they're not going to be able to solve the defensive issues this year. So they went out to try and just grab as many high batting average, high home run, high slugging percentage OPS guys that they could. And they're going to just try to outscore some teams here over the last couple months of the season. And so that was done with Asdrubal Cabrera in mind. And that was also done, as you mentioned a second ago, with Wilson Ramos in mind. The Phillies trade for Wilson Ramos for a player to be named later, or the oft-traded cash considerations. We're not going to see Ramos for probably a couple of weeks. He's currently on the DL with a hamstring strain, which is why he essentially cost nothing. Matt Klentak said that the best-case scenario is for Ramos to be activated in the middle of the month, hopefully in just a couple of weeks. The latest would be September 1st. So worst-case scenario is you only have this guy for a month, but that's why he didn't really cost you anything. He's had a really good offensive year, Paul. He's hitting 297, 346, 488 with 14 homers, 53 RBI, 30 runs scored. He made the All-Star team, didn't play because of the injury. His 1.8 Fangraphs wins above replacement was 7th among 28 major league catchers with at least 200 plate appearances. He's 3rd among those catchers in a weighted on base average, 3rd in weighted runs created, tied for 3rd in home runs, and tied for the lead in RBI. And one more stat I'll throw out at you here. His 297 average would be the best on this team right now.
Ooh-ah.
His 14 home runs would be tied for 5th, his on-base percentage would be 4th, and his slugging percentage would be 2nd. So the Phillies bring aboard, when he's ready, a really solid offensive catcher to take the place of Jorge Alfaro and Andrew Knapp, both of whom have been very uneven this year at the bottom of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a shame that you can't, you know, necessarily ride the tandem that's brought you here, you know, to finish the journey on the horse you rode in on. But it was a need. You know, this team is already light in catching depth. You know, you look beyond Alfaro and Knapp, and they have a couple guys who are intriguing in the low minors, but apart from someone like Logan Moore in AAA, they don't really have guys who seem capable as catchers beyond the two who are currently on the major league team. It's kind of an issue. Yeah. You know, we're lucky that neither of them got hurt, and it seems like we're luckier still that in this game against the Red Sox tonight on Tuesday, that Alfaro getting hit in the hand by a pitch didn't end up worse than it was.
Yeah, right.
Picking up a guy like Wilson Ramos at the price that they got him for, and they have to wait a couple weeks, like you said, you know, in order to make this work. But to pick up a guy with this offensive profile, you're talking about an instant upgrade. And even if he has to wait until September, which he very well might, that's fine. I just ran this real quick. 22 of the team's last 26 games in September are against division opponents.
Oh,
if he can make it back for September 1st, fine. That's great. Yeah. If he needs to take a little bit more time to get fully healthy, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
If he can be ready for that divisional stretch, including that huge, what looks to be massive 3-game home series against the Braves to finish the year, then the Phillies will be in a good position. That's okay. I'm cool with waiting.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I didn't even think about that. That's a great point. September is going to be a hugely important month for this team. And so you're right. You want him to be fully ready. You want that hamstring to be fully ready to go for him to be there in September. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, offensively, obviously, he's going to be a big upgrade over Jorge Alfaro and Andrew Knapp. Alfaro hasn't been bad this year. He's had his ups and downs hitting. He had a big RBI double in the game against the Red Sox here on Tuesday night. He's hitting .254 coming into the game, .305 on base, .398, 7 homers, 23 RBI. In his first full season, as he's really trying to improve defensively more than offensively, I'll take that from Alfaro, but striking out too much, and he's just been he's been too much of an automatic out a lot of nights at the bottom of the lineup. And as far as Andrew Knapp is concerned, he's always had a decent on-base percentage. But, again, he's not an offensive player that you can count on. So, offensively, it's a monster upgrade. Fangraphs' Jay Jaffe wrote up the trade for Fangraphs, talking about Ramos's abilities defensively. And the version of defensive run save that does not include pitch framing, Ramos has been average this year defensively. If you take out pitch framing, Alfaro has been 2 runs below average and Knapp 5 runs below average. However, when you put the framing inclusive version in, you have Ramos as being 1 run below average, Alfaro being even, and Knapp 10 runs below average. So obviously Alfaro a little bit better with pitch framing, but according to Baseball Prospectus's numbers, Ramos has been just under a run below average overall, but dead even on framing. Not as good as Alfaro, who's been way above average with framing and all the fielding. So it's pretty clear there is a little bit of a downgrade, but I also wonder if maybe Ramos's veteran experience working with some of the pitchers during the late August or September, whenever he comes back, won't be a plus down the stretch, having been through pennant races, having been in games like this, whereas Alfaro and Knapp have not been there yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's tough for us as outsiders to really get a grasp of. You know, bringing in guys like this, bringing in guys like Cabrera, maybe even Aaron Loop. I'm not really sure what he's like as a clubhouse guy, but maybe he brings, you know, similar qualities in. Someone like Wilson Ramos. You want these guys who have been around for a while to be there for questions that these younger guys might have. Like, it is an important thing. It's something that I know I personally kind of hand waved when I was in my early to mid 20s, thinking like, no, these numbers tell me everything I need to know. I don't need to worry about any intangibles or anything like that. But you know, as you get a little bit older and you start thinking more about the human side of these things, right? Like, thinking about these players as early to mid 20s athletes who are trying to get their footing at the most advanced level of their sport, many of them in what we can call their rookie year. Having someone there who they can talk to, not even necessarily their manager, but someone who's like a colleague, someone who is someone who's been there, someone who's been through the things that they are hoping to go through as players, it really can't hurt. I don't think, unless you're talking about guys who are, you know, notable clubhouse problems, and thankfully there are, you know, only a few of those. When you bring in dudes who've been around for a few years and who play positions that you have some of your prized young guys playing at, who you want them to like continue to grow and ask these questions and learn things, even apart from what they do on the field, and what they do on the field should be a big upgrade. It looks like this could be really good for the continued development of these guys.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And, you know, I think, you know, what you got with Ramos is, you know, even in game, you know, just being knowing how to call a game, you know, better than Alfaro might or Knapp might. And, you know, really, frankly, Alfaro and Knapp have shepherded a pitching staff that has been very good here this year. So you can't really criticize, I don't think, the game calling as much or anything like that. But, you know, it's certainly an upgrade. And hopefully he comes back sooner rather than later. But again, like you said, if we only have Wilson Ramos for September. It was surprising, though. I mean, we didn't really hear the Phillies connected to Wilson Ramos at all, and every trade deadline, there's always one or two of these guys that pop up. Tommy Pham going to the Rays from the Cardinals was a big surprise, too. You hear the normal names, but every now and then, one of these guys pops up. So, I take it you like the move of Wilson Ramos to the Phillies.
I do. I mean, it is kind of a bummer that we won't get to plug him into the lineup immediately, or have him on the bench immediately. But like we were just talking about, having him for September when the Phillies are going to play a bunch of crucial division games, you're giving up a player to be named from a small list of names. There was one report saying that the name is someone off of MLB.com's organization top 30 prospects for what that's worth, or cash considerations, whatever it ends up being. It's a nominal price to pay for a month of a season for a guy who should, for all intents and purposes, be a help.
Yeah.
You can only do so much in one month,
right.
But it's really hard to look at that and say, oh, they gave up too much.
Right. Right. No, absolutely. There's no way to look at it. I mean, you're getting, you basically just bought yourself an all-star player for hopefully the last 6 weeks of the season. And so the other move that they made, and this came just, you know, a couple of minutes after the Wilson Ramos deal was announced, the Phillies did get a bullpen arm. They got a lefty reliever from the Toronto Blue Jays, Aaron Loop. They traded AAA reliever Jacob, and I'm not going to get this guy's name right, but Wagspack. It's not somebody I'd ever heard of before. About that, I think that's pretty close. Loop has a 4.54 ERA in 50 relief appearances for Toronto, 42 strikeouts and 35 and two thirds innings. So he's definitely a high strikeout guy. He's faced 564 left-handers in his career. This from the Athletic's Ben Harris. 564 left-handers he's faced. He's allowed 5 home runs in his career. That's less than 1%. He's only given up 30 extra base hits to left-handers total in his career. And so Aaron Loop comes to you. I think this is kind of interesting. He's kind of like a Pat Neshek from the left-hand side, really kind of sidewinds. He's held left-handers to a 6.18 OPS in his career, 120 strikeouts to 29 walks, and 565 batters faced. You know, you look at the ERA 4.54, and you think to yourself, that doesn't look great. But, you know, it certainly seems as though against left-handers, he's a pretty effective pitcher, and that seems to be what his role will be on this team.
Yeah, and I like it for that reason. Mm-hmm. You know, there are only so many left-handers who can get both lefties and righties out really effectively. Mm-hmm. There just aren't that many of them, right? So lefties, just as a rule, are sort of flawed that way.
Yeah.
And so you look at a guy like Aaron Loop, right? He has not been as awesome against lefties the last couple of years. He started out his career looking really great. Like, I remember when this guy first came up around the time Toronto was contending for a playoff spot. This guy would come in and lefties wouldn't do anything to him. He reminded me of a slightly less dramatic version of a reliever who used to pitch for San Diego named Joe Thatcher, who was really dramatic from the left side. He dipped down a little bit more than Loop does, but he was absolute death against left-handed hitters. No left-handed hitters could ever get him. He was part of that bullpen that included Mike Adams when he was at his prime.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was just unbelievable. And so I looked at Aaron Loop when he first came up. I'm like, all right, this guy, he doesn't really blow you away with his stuff, but there's got to be something about the way he releases the ball that just gives these guys fits. He comes at you from the side. You know, it's sort of like a three-quarter almost sidearm kind of thing. He doesn't throw super hard. I think he tops out somewhere around like 93. And he throws a good slider. And sometimes that's all you really need.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about a division that includes the likes of Freddie Freeman, who is going to be the number one left-handed nemesis for this team in these last 2 months.
Absolutely.
You want somebody who can get that guy out.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Like, we got to get this guy out. And right now, prior to this Loop trade, the team was running Austin Davis and Adam Morgan. Austin Davis is a rookie who has looked very good, but is a rookie. And Adam Morgan, who doesn't really seem to be following up last year's second half all that well.
He isn't.
You want to have a little more confidence that you can get this guy out.
Yeah, and you don't want Tommy Hunter to be the guy you try to get lefties out with. I mean, Hunter's pitching a little bit better as of late, but you know, as a right hander, you don't want Tommy Hunter against Bryce Harper late in the game. You don't want him against Freddie Freeman late in the game.
No, absolutely not. I see where the organization is coming from. I get that they like Hunter's stuff against lefties. And while they were working with a diminished left-handed staff, you know, in the Hobie Milner and Zach Curtis era, it was nice to have a right-hander who could, you know, jam lefties up a little bit, at least in theory. And he has pitched a little bit better of late. But no. I would much rather bring in a guy like Aaron Loop, who's got a track record of really holding down his platoon side.
Yeah.
You know?
And the Phillies need that. I mean, they absolutely did. You're right. Austin Davis has been good. He's been very good since he's been called up. But Adam Morgan has not been reliable. You know, it was definitely a need. There were some other names that, you know, the Phillies were rumored to be interested in. You mentioned Jake Diekman a minute ago, but he was traded to the Diamondbacks instead of the Phillies. The price was obviously higher for Jake Diekman. One of the things I'll note is that Klintak did say after all these trades went down and I guess this was part of what they had in mind, was that, you know, these moves won't dramatically impact the playing time of their young players. I think I don't know how much that argument holds up when you're talking about Alfaro when Ramos is here, but Klentak basically said, you know, they wanted to try and make some deals so that it didn't rob the young players of playing time. And that's the balance I've been talking about on this podcast lately. And I mentioned that to Gabe Kapler when I had him on, and he kind of poo-pooed that a little bit. But I think that's what the Phillies have been trying to navigate here, is they wanted to improve. They knew that there were holes. And if they were going to compete for the division, that they needed to fill some of these holes up. And so they had to go out and they had to get some guys. But they wanted to try and find a way to not rip a lot of playing time away from Scott Kingery, to not rip any playing time from Nick Williams. That's probably why you didn't see them add an outfielder here at the trade deadline, is they wanted to. Nick Williams has been really hot. Michael Franco has been playing really well. You don't want to take playing time away from those guys right now. And a guy like Aaron Loop, and the fact that they didn't add an outfielder, that all kind of plays into it here. You know, they think that they've been able to maintain some of the growth aspect of what was supposed to be this 2018 Philly season, a learning season for a lot of these guys.
And that's why I think the moves that they've made have been the right moves for this team. You know, I think you and I have even talked about this explicitly, and it's become really clear over the last month that this is a team that has very specific needs. They went after Manny Machado as a rental because he was so obviously far and away the best option in his position and a clear area of need for this team that it made all the sense in the world to go after him. And when the price became prohibitive, they were like, well, actually, I think we need to sit this one out. Let's talk again in November. Yeah. But then you look at the moves that they've made. They picked up Asdrubal Cabrera as a half-season rental. They picked up Aaron Loop as a half-season rental. They picked up Wilson Ramos as a half-season rental. And all at positions where they've had difficulty this season. Cabrera, you can argue a little bit here and there that you're not really sure exactly where he fits in. And Cesar has obviously had a fine season at second base. And Franco has come on lately at third base. But, you know, that's quibbling at this point. They identified the areas that they needed to upgrade. They went out and they found guys who weren't going to cost a ton. You know, Jacob Wegspack is a nice potential back end starting pitcher who was sort of stuck in AAA and behind a myriad other guys in the Phillies org chart right now. They gave up Franklin Quilome, who has scuffled this year, but could turn into a nice reliever if he gets converted. He's sort of a lottery ticket for a guy who's having a nice season in Cabrera. And then they give up, well, who knows what in exchange for Ramos. They gave up nothing. I hate to be that blunt when we're talking about, you know, again, real human beings like Quilome and Wegspack. They're trying to have major league careers here. But in terms of value and comparative value, and you look at, you know, comparing them against guys like Sixto Sanchez and Hylan Ortiz and Adonis Medina, and even, you know, lower end lottery tickets like Daniel Brito, they didn't give up any of the guys that they could really use for some massive firepower if the opportunity presented itself. And they still got better. That's exactly what everybody wanted. Yeah. They wanted them to get better, and they didn't want them to give up a whole crap load to do it. Ta-da! Here's what you got. You got exactly what you wished for.
Yeah, and you wished for offense, and that's what this team went out and got. This team got two players that will make this lineup a much deeper lineup all the way throughout. There really won't be a whole lot of rest areas for teams when you're not trying to navigate the Phillies lineup anymore moving forward. I will say there's an area of concern that I would have liked to have seen them get somebody else for the bullpen, a more established left-handed arm. That's quibbling at this point, just because I don't know the first thing about Aaron Loop. I follow the league pretty closely. I'd never heard of Aaron Loop before in my life. Before this trade today, I guess we can't all be expected to know every middle reliever on every team.
That's just silly, John.
It is just silly. I have a family I have to help take care of. But it's kind of funny that it's, you know, you hear all the big names mentioned, and so you feel kind of let down when you don't get Jake Diekman, or when the Giants decide not to do anything and Will Smith doesn't become available. But I want to talk about the starting pitching market, because when we're talking about protecting the young players, when we're talking about not giving up any of the real valuable prospects, like you were just talking about, some of the guys you would have given up in a Machado trade, They didn't go after Chris Archer. I don't even know if they were in the conversation. They didn't appear to be in the conversation at all with Kevin Gausman of the Orioles and with whoever else may have been available here at the trade deadline. And that's likely because it would have cost them Adonis Medina, or would have cost them Jalen Ortiz, or maybe probably would have had to cost them Sixto Sanchez for Chris Archer. Look at what the Pirates gave up. So you can, when that's the case, you can clearly see why they were not in on any of those guys. But still, and I wrote about this for the Good Fight last week, you've got an issue with the Phillies starting staff with some innings that these innings limits these guys are going to hit. There haven't been any innings limits imposed on any of the Phillies pitchers that I'm aware of, but they're all about to pass some career high in innings limits with the exception of Jake Arrieta. And so you wonder, especially as we've seen Nick Pivetta leaking some oil here over the last month and a half or so, and with Zach Eflin still not really having found his footing yet after the blister that sidelined him for about 10 to 15 days, you don't really know if this staff is going to be able to hold it together. Now, the last two nights in Boston, Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta did their thing. And if this team's going to stay in it, Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta are going to have to continue to do their thing. But that's why I was thinking that maybe the Phillies would pursue a starting pitcher here during this July trade deadline, because if you wait until August, the options become a little bit less palatable. You're looking for, and we'll get into some specific names here in just a few minutes. What do you think about the Phillies punting on starting pitching at the moment? Was there anything out there that you could see that would have been worth the price?
This one was really tricky. You know, we were just talking about how they made upgrades on the offensive side of the ball in areas that they needed to make an upgrade, or really should have made an upgrade. They did. And they acquired a left-handed reliever who I like for the price that they gave up. That's fine. Your piece was really timely, because one thing that I don't think I've seen much of at all so far this season is any consideration for what we're doing with these rookie or second year starters in terms of workload. And in thinking about how long they can conceivably go, how deep into the season we can expect them to, pitch at the top of their game, how late into the season we can stretch them out and not consider them an additional health risk. You know, that's another thing that comes up as you get into late August and September. I would have liked an addition, but in looking at the guys who went, you know, you mentioned Gausman and Price being, or I'm sorry, Gausman and Archer, another former Rays pitcher there, being the two big guys who left, and the comparative packages that were sent out for those guys. The Braves gave up a fair deal to Gausman and Darren O'Day, who probably isn't pitching again for this season, and he'll be around next year. And the Pirates gave up a lot.
They gave up a lot
to get Chris Archer.
They gave up more for Chris Archer than they got for the Garrett Cole trade. Which,
yeah, that's right.
You know,
yeah. They're doing weird things. I'm not really sure I totally understand what the Pirates are doing. But even that aside, the prices that were paid for these guys, as much as I like them, Gausman in particular, I was sort of a fan favorite of his. I am fine with them sitting out on picking those guys up. And there didn't really seem to be a better option that was readily available now at this deadline.
Yeah.
And so you got to stick with what you have. And luckily, even though it's mostly unproven, the Phillies have a lot of really advanced starter depth. They have the five guys who are currently up in the rotation right now, right? You know, you have Nolan Arrieta and they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you have Pivetta, Velasquez, and Eflin who are holding down the fort right now. In case anything goes awry, you have Eniel De Los Santos, you have Cole Irvin, you have Ranger Suarez. Those are three guys immediately who jump to mind as guys who would be serviceable. And
Ben Lively, who has a number of major league starts under his belt. You know, I mean, he's not sexy, but he's done it.
He has. Yeah, exactly. So they have options. And I think the Phillies realized that. And they realized that, yes, these were potentially chips to use to consolidate and get somebody a little bit better, but probably not at the level of the packages that were sent out. And so they realize, oh, okay, so we still have these guys on the 40-man. If anything goes nutsoid, and it's not right now, thankfully, like everybody's doing okay. You know, you can reasonably count on Velasquez, Eflin, and Pivetta to do okay on a night-to-night basis, at least, that they didn't have to go nuts. There was no desperation there. Not now.
True.
I think when the market opens back up once the season is over, because you know maybe they'll find somebody in a waiver claim, but I highly doubt it. Starters and waiver claims. The Verlander thing last year was just this huge exception. Usually don't find impact starters through waivers. When the market opens back up after the season is over, they will have their pick of the litter. And you better believe they're going to make moves because they got a 40-man roster crunch coming up and some valuable guys who are going to need to be protected that they're going to have to do some shuffling. And boy, yep. howdy, if they don't look for a starting pitcher upgrade then, well, then I have completely misread things because that's what I'm looking at. I don't know who they're going to target. I don't know who they're going to try and pick up. But that's just the time in big flashing neon letters where I'm just like, yes, this is the moment. They didn't need to do it right now. As much as it would have helped, they didn't need to do it right now. And they're going to go into the winter. And I hate to oversell something when I have no idea what really might happen. But I have a hard time seeing anything other than these guys are going to be in on everybody who floats out under the trade block. Everybody.
Well, they're going to have to be because, you know, we talk about the free agent market, and I think the Phillies are going to be big players, obviously, for Machado and any of the other big-time position players that are available. But I don't think they want to spend the money on the starting pitchers who are going to be available. That is not a particularly strong lot this year. I think Dallas Keuchel is probably the headliner. Kershaw, if he opts out, but even with Kershaw, you've got his injury concerns moving forward. But you do mention the fact on the trade market during the offseason when guys may become available, the fact that the Phillies did not spend a lot of their prospect capital now means they still have it for the winter.
Yep.
If some other pitchers shake out, like suppose a pitcher like Gerrit Cole is made available by someone next year, well, the Phillies still have the bullets to go out and make a deal like that if they decide that they want to go all in on a certain pitcher that's controllable for a couple of years. I mean, they can still do that. That's what people don't really understand is, you know, when the Phillies were making some of those deals back in the 2007 to 2011 days, the Ruben Amaro days, a lot of those prospects didn't end up working out for the teams that they got traded to, but you could have used those prospects to maybe get other players that would have helped you more. And that's the situation I think the Phillies are in right now, and that's a good situation, is that you can use some of these guys as capital for next winter when who knows what will be made available by teams.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you want to leave yourself in the best possible situation you can. You know, I think this is the existential crisis facing every single general manager or whatever their title is these days in Major League Baseball, right? Like, how do you contend in the present while still keeping things stocked up in your pantry just in case somebody gets hurt and or someone you really like becomes available in trade? You know, like that's got to keep people up at nights. The Phillies are doing a great job right now doing exactly what you just said. They have not cashed in their big chips, and they may not. You know, there's no telling whether they'll actually trade Sixto or whether they'll actually trade Adam Haseley or, you know, any number of things. You know, there's no telling because it all depends on who becomes available. You know, if the Giants completely fall in the tank throughout the last part of this year and say, well, maybe we need to rethink things. Our McCutcheon and Longoria acquisitions didn't really work out. Things are kind of iffy. Our farm system could use a little bit of a boost. I'm not really sure what the next couple of years look like. Oh, look who's coming up on his option years. Madison Bumgarner. Wonder what teams can pay for him. So, you know, like that's a complete hypothetical, but you know,
but it's realistic.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to be armed for that situation. And you know what? If Madison Bumgarner or someone as good as him becomes available through trade, you're damn right. The Phillies have the guys who should make every team think about it long and hard. I mean, maybe every team doesn't value Sixto the way, you know, team A or team B does, or the way we do. But it's hard to argue that this guy's a top 20 prospect and he's going to be a 20-year-old who throws 102 miles an hour. Like, what? How much better are you going to do? So
there's lots of those guys out there.
Oh, dime a dozen. So, no, the Phillies they're in a good position. You know, they have holes to fix. The roster is messy and they have work to do.
Yeah.
But they have the ability to make the improvements that they need to.
Yep, and I had a couple people ask me on Twitter today, you know, what could they do in August if they decide to want to try and make a play for some starting pitching or if they wanted to maybe get another outfielder for the bench, you know, say Roman Quinn, you know, steps on the white line and tears his ACL or something like that, or you know something
that
happens.
Poor
where they
guy.
Need to
oh my god!
I you know he had a good night in this finale at Boston, which we're going to talk about the Red Sox series quickly when we're done with all the trade stuff here in just a few minutes. So hang tight. I suppose that you know there's an opening that comes up in the outfield. They need another bench bat, or you know they do want to improve the starting rotation. There are some possibilities out there. Some of the guys who will probably clear waivers include Andrew McCutchen, Curtis Granderson, a couple of guys who we heard mentioned over and over. If Michael Franco for some reason goes in the tank, maybe Adrian Beltre becomes available. Josh Donaldson, if he recovers from his injuries, could be dealt in August. You're looking at Jose Bautista, who again was another name mentioned with the Phillies a little bit. When you're looking at starting pitchers, some of the guys who have been dealing with injuries this year, we will know a little bit more about them next month. Irvin Santana, Johnny Cueto, you've got Jeff Samardzija, Jordan Zimmermann. Just these are some of the guys who could be available, and they might all stink. They may all be terrible options, and they might not help the Phillies at all. That's kind of why Chris Archer wasn't going to get dealt in August. Gausman wasn't going to get dealt. You know, whoever the real intriguing names that basically would have set you up for a few years, they were going to go today. But there is some potential help. If somebody like Irvin Santana puts together two or three really good starts and let's say Nick Pivetta absolutely implodes, all right, well then maybe you get Irvin Santana for super cheap, or you go get Johnny Cueto for super cheap, or Samardzija, or whatever it happens to be. The bottom line is the Phillies are not going to overpay for anybody, and with the waiver deadline, you're rarely overpaying, unless it's for like a Justin Verlander, like you mentioned last year, which was an outlier. Do any of those names perk your ears up a little bit?
Well, I'll tell you, if Cueto were a little bit more healthy, I would think about it. I think last thing I saw is that he might actually be done for this year.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. He might need surgery. But you actually, one of the other names that you mentioned when you were reading them off is the guy that I would think about. Because August is the time of damaged goods. There is no perfect player who clears waivers and all of a sudden becomes immediately available. And you're like, oh, yes, that guy, Jordan Zimmermann. This guy was very, very bad last year.
He might have been the worst pitcher in Major League Baseball outside of Jeremy Hellickson in the second half. It was really something else.
It was horrid. And I think that turned a lot of people off to what exactly this guy has accomplished and what he's capable of. He hasn't exactly roared back this year. I wouldn't say that this is, kicking down the door and, you know, returning to that top 10 Cy Young form that he had, but it is at the very least a nice bounce back here. He has more than five times as many strikeouts as walks, which is the kind of Jordan Zimmermann I think we all became accustomed to when he was with Washington. He looks to be healthy for the most part. He's got the walks down. He's not letting up quite as many homers as he was. The only problem, and this is what makes him damaged goods, is that he's still owed $25 million each of the next 2 years, and that's why he'd clear waivers.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's why nobody is going to put a claim on him, because the Tigers, who are going absolutely nowhere, would be like, why, yes, we could use $25 million each of the next 2 years. Sure, take him. So he's going to clear. He is absolutely going to clear. And I think if he stays healthy and if he keeps pitching the way he has this year, I would at the very least think about it, because you're not going to have to give up a top 20 guy from your organization, most likely, maybe someone toward the bottom end. And you're probably going to be able to get the Tigers to pay some of that down. Now, you're taking a risk, right? This is a guy who, you know, we just saw just last year that he was really terrible, and he could fall back into that bad pattern again. He could. But at the same time,
he could.
This is a guy with such a pedigree and such a track record that, barring some potential injury that comes along, I would be okay with looking into adding him onto the payroll for the next 2 years. Obviously, the price is right for everything, and you have to talk about where you want to get it paid down to. The Phillies don't have any problem paying guys contracts. They wouldn't have to pay the full $25 million here. There's no way, because the Tigers have no leverage in these sorts of discussions. And the Phillies could be like, well, yeah, I mean, we can absorb that. We can maybe ask you to pay down a little bit less than some of our competitors might, if that's appetizing to you. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Right, exactly.
So, I honestly, that's a guy that I think really long and hard about. Again, August is the time of damaged goods. You're not going to find a perfect guy. Jordan Zimmermann is not a perfect guy. He comes with warts. But if something does go wrong, yeah, I would definitely think about looking into that guy.
And I like the Cueto and Samardzija ideas if they were at all healthy, but Samardzija still isn't throwing yet. It doesn't, and he's got that shoulder inflammation. I don't know if he's coming back this year either. You mentioned Cueto is a mystery. Irvin Santana was pretty good last year, and the injury that he suffered in the offseason was a kind of a weird, fluky finger injury, not an elbow or a shoulder. And when that's ready to go, he's already made a few starts, so he's back already. He's a guy that I would have some interest in if he proves to be effective over the next couple of weeks. But again, you're right. The Jordan Zimmermann point is well taken. You know, he's owed so much money that you're not going to give anything up for him.
Right.
And, you know, he could be a guy that could give you some innings in case somebody like Zach Eflin or Pivetta or Vince Velasquez really falls apart in August. But those are some of the possibilities. And there will be some relief pitchers who clear waivers too, guys. You know, some of the guys who, you know, maybe were rumored here in July, they might become available in August again. So I don't think the door is closed on the Phillies adding some more relief help if need be. I remember back in 08, they added Scott Ayer during August, and he ended up playing a very important role during that 2008 season.
Mm.
So it's possible to add some guys in August that help. Jamie Moyer was an August add, and Matt Stairs was an August add. Jamie Moyer in 06, Matt Stairs in 08. These August additions, they can sometimes actually really help you in the postseason. So don't sleep on the waiver trade deadline. So overall, Paul, what grade do you give Matt Klentak here for this trade deadline season? This month of July, what his wheeling and dealing? What's your grade?
This is a B plus. This is a B plus
That's
for
exactly
me.
Exactly my grade.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep. I think the only way this goes into A territory is if he somehow was able to land Machado, who was clearly the best guy on the market, who clearly fit the Phillies' biggest need. And it just became prohibitive, and the Dodgers could afford to give up the price that the Orioles wanted. And so maybe that's not necessarily his fault, but he didn't land the best guy, so it's a little hard for me to give him an A range. That being said, he made upgrades in places where this team could use him, and he did them at reasonable prices. I'm saying things like a used car salesman right now. Everything seems reasonable. He upgraded the now while preserving the future. And that makes all comers happy. You know, everybody comes from these two different sides when you talk about trades, like, no, go for it right now. And then no, don't mortgage the future. These are moves that makes everybody happy. Everybody.
Well, you'd think this is Philadelphia, Paul.
No.
You really can't even make anybody happy. But no.
Yeah.
No, your point is well taken. And I think B plus is fair. B to B plus I think is fair. I think I would have liked to seen them go after a starting pitcher, but like you said, if the price is too high, then it just didn't make any sense to do it right now. And if, like we said, August is still here, so there's still some time for him to make some moves. It's kind of a B plus slash incomplete because you know, they may have some other logs in the fire here. You know, it's still probably unfair to grade it yet because some of these moves are made with certain assumptions in mind, like the starting pitching will be okay. It may not be. And if you haven't planned for the contingency of it not being okay, then that can change the grade in hindsight. But as of right now, where we stand, I think you're right. The biggest need for this team was offense, especially on the infield. And as we, you know, the more you think about it, adding a massive upgrade at catcher could be a stroke of genius. So B plus, I think, is right on the money for Matt Klentak. And no one can say that Matt Klentak is like Stan Pat.
Nope.
You know, I heard that. It's like, oh, he's going to be Stan Pat. He's like Stan Pat Gillick. It's like,
nope.
That's not Matt Klentak.
Mm-mm.
Smart moves, but moves.
Yep.
They're taking advantage of the opportunity that's in front of them and made the team significantly better. This wasn't Ed Wade adding Dennis Cook and Turk Wendell. All right. These are real good players that have been added to this roster that should make this team. And I say should because all the general manager can do is go out and get the players and give them to the manager and hope that the players work out. But I think he did what he should and had to do. Before we get into the Red Sox series, real quick, some of the other moves that of note affecting teams that have to do with veteran within the Phillies sphere. We mentioned the Braves getting Kevin Gausman. Darren O'Day, I think you mentioned, isn't pitching this year, but Gausman is an interesting character because the Orioles don't really have an analytics department. I don't think they take full advantage of all the stuff that's out there, which could be one of the things holding Gausman back a little bit. So I kind of like a change of scenery for him. I think he could improve a lot getting out of Baltimore. The Pirates, as we mentioned, get Chris Archer. I think, you know, if the Phillies end up falling into second place and they end up battling for a wild card, the Pirates and the Brewers and the Dodgers moves are going to affect what the Phillies did. So the Pirates getting Chris Archer makes them a lot better. The Brewers got Jonathan Scope, but did not pick up a starting pitcher, which was their biggest need. The Dodgers get Brian Dozier. The rich get richer there. And the Nationals do nothing but sell Brandon Kinstler. They kept Bryce Harper. They kept Gio Gonzalez. And I guess everybody in Washington on the Nationals, Paul, was celebrating the fact that they're all still together because they beat the Mets 25-4 on Tuesday night. So they wanted to fix their run differential in one night, and it appears that's what they've done. So your thoughts real quick on some of these National League trade deadline moves. Are any of these really open your eyes at all?
25-4 opens my eyes, but
yeah, no kidding, right?
Oh my God. I think the biggest eye opener was the Brewers not adding a starting pitcher. That was strange to me.
I agree.
I think they've compensated for it by adding Mike Moustakas and John Scope. But now their roster, much like the Phillies, is sort of a mess because you have an infield of Scope, Moustakas, and Travis Shaw, and one of them has to play shortstop, presumably, I think.
Yeah, good luck.
I think. I don't know.
Yeah, you would imagine. They got to put somebody there. Yeah. I mean, I know shifting is all the rage nowadays, but you do have to have a shortstop sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know. But they have a good team.
Or maybe you don't. I don't know.
Yeah, well, defense. It's a shifting blob anymore. But they have this weird situation with their starting pitching where they're getting good stuff from Juli Chacin, the former Rockies pitcher who's having a bit of a resurgence here. Chase Anderson has held down the fort decently well enough. And Junior Guerra, who's sort of like a cult hero out in Milwaukee, is also doing pretty well. But then after that, you have a 22-year-old rookie in Freddie Peralta, who's doing some starting right now. Zach Davies and Brent Suter are hurt. And then what? That's four guys who are active right now. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? What's the plan?
It's very surprising given the injuries, too, especially the Brent Suter injury. I thought would have pushed him over the edge to get a starter.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that was going to be it. I really thought that was going to be it. I thought maybe what they gave up for Scope, they were going to give up to get Gossman or something like that. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It made all the sense in the world. And to my feeble brain, it was like, yeah, well, Milwaukee, they're in the hunt. They absolutely need a starting pitcher. And then they didn't get one. So, like, what do I know? What do we know? We look at these things.
We don't know anything.
No, we don't know anything. We look at these things on their face and they're like, that seems so head smackingly obvious. Why didn't they do it? Maybe they're thinking the same way the Phillies are. Maybe they're waiting for somebody to clear waiver. Maybe they're waiting for Jordan Zimmerman. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know how long they can stretch this out. I admittedly don't know a whole lot about their upper minor leagues. I don't know who they could try and slot in there to be another starter next to Freddie Peralta. But it sure as hell looks to me like they could use the help, and I don't know where that's going to come from.
Yeah, I don't either. And I haven't heard anything about Jimmy Nelson's timeline to come back. I thought he was going to be back around midseason, but I've been looking online the last day or two, and I don't see anything about his timetable to return. So it doesn't seem like that's happening anytime soon. Mm. So yeah, that was, and Pittsburgh getting Archer. I think the team was surprising. I think we all expected the Brewers were heavy on Archer. It's from what it sounded like, but the Pirates offer beat theirs. And man, you know, it sounds like the Brewers tried and they just weren't able to, they weren't able to lock anything down. So you're right. It might be August that they decide to move around, but I think the Phillies improved themselves as much as the Braves improved themselves. Kevin Gausman could be a big add for them. Of course, he could also be the frustrating pitcher that has been living in Baltimore for the last few years, and the nerves came in when you saw that the Braves might be getting Chris Archer, and as kind of up and down as I am on Archer, I still didn't want him anywhere near Atlanta for the next few years.
Nope.
So Kind of glad that didn't happen. All right, so real quick, before we get out of here, let's talk about this Boston series just for like 5 minutes or so. And the Phillies split the two-game series in Boston. They had a chance to win the first game, obviously, but fell 2-1 in 13 innings. A painful game to watch as the offense just really was dormant for most of the game. Did blow a couple opportunities here and there. The big takeaway from that game, aside from the fact that the offense just couldn't get it done, and Odubel Herrera had probably his worst game of the season, both running the bases and making a huge defensive mistake in center field that really cost Aaron Nola and the Phillies the game, was that Aaron Nola was an absolute monster in that opener on the national stage on ESPN, completely shutting down and dominating the best lineup in baseball. And we saw him look electric in the All-Star game against some prime competition. There's no doubt in anyone's mind Aaron Nola is a top five, top 10 starter in Major League Baseball. He was just incredible.
Yep. Absolutely, 100% agreed. He's a revelation, and he already had high expectations, you know, being a top 10 pick and a college starting pitcher. You kind of expect those guys to move through their systems pretty quickly, and he did. But he has turned into something a lot of people who, you know, I trust and who I read and whose opinions I value when talking about amateur prospects and low minors pro athletes. He's added something. His stuff has ticked up a grade basically across the board. He's throwing harder. I mean, that always helps. He's gone from throwing 92 to throwing 95 pretty regularly, and that'll always get you farther. He throws two curveballs, which now he apparently can manipulate at will.
With
he can
command. That's the crazy thing, yeah.
Like, he can decide whether he wants to throw you a slurve or a 12-6 basically at will, which is wild. And now it looks like he's got a changeup that can really do some damage
to right-handers, even to both lefties and righties.
And every time I watch this guy pitch, it hits me harder and harder every time I watch an outing of his. Like, this guy has a chance to be the best right-handed starting pitcher the organization has ever developed.
Yeah,
like, I mean, you have to stack him against some tough company. Forgive me, history buffs. I think Robin Roberts was a home
Robin run. Roberts. Yep.
Yeah. So, like, that's the guy you measure against, and he pitched in a completely different era. You look at Nola now in today's game, given the constraints of everything and the way pitchers are handling this, that, and the other thing. This guy has leveled up. Mm-hmm. And we have reached a point where you are absolutely correct, where we have to start thinking about this guy as – at worst, if you're the biggest cynic in the world, I think you have a hard time putting Nola outside your top 20 in terms of starting pitchers.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
No doubt.
And you want your guys to make statements on stages like he had last night on Monday night. And he did that. Now, it's a shame the offense didn't pick him up. It's a shame that Odubel misread that line drive and, you know, it went all the way to the wall over his head. And, you know, what's done is done. They lost the game. Okay. The fact that he was able to do what he did and make it look so good against the best offense in this game in their home park, which is notoriously hitter friendly. It was everything you could have wanted. It was absolutely perfect, except for the whole not winning the game thing, which, you know, kind of sucks. But Nola is the guy you put out there for Game 162, if you have to win. He is the guy you put out there for game one of a playoff series. He's the guy you put out there for game seven of a playoff series. He is the guy with a capital G that you want pitching for this team right now. And it's beautiful. And he's only 25. Yeah. It's so good. I love it.
Well, he's the simple way to put it is he's turning in one of the greatest pitching seasons in this club's history right now. He's authoring one of the best pitching seasons in Phillies history right now. You look at his ERA and compare where he is to the rest of the league and everything like that. There have been few, if any, that are better than what Aaron Nola is doing. He's ahead of where Cole Hamels was at this stage of his career with the Phillies. That is the level we're talking about right now with Aaron Nola, and it is really exciting to see. And I know you've mentioned this before online. I think people have written about it, the good fight. And then maybe it was you who wrote about getting this guy an extension.
Oh, yeah.
To an extension
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and it could be Aaron Nola who's holding out on the extension. Maybe the Phillies have offered him one, but it please make it happen.
Yeah, no, I mean,
please.
I'm at the point right now where I'll continue to push for it. I like tweeting out pay Nola as a hashtag every once in a while.
Yeah, it's good.
But at this point, it's not going to happen during the season. I think we can all pretty much agree that's not going to happen during the season. But this offseason, yeah, you got to make it happen. You got to do it, please.
Make it happen. Open the piggy bank for
please,
Aaron Nola.
Please.
And in the second game, the Phillies won 3-1, a much-needed win, broke a four-game losing streak, especially with the Nationals, like we mentioned, putting up 25 on the Mets. And as we're recording this right now, the Braves are up comfortably on the Marlins. The Braves and the Nationals getting the two punching bags of the National League East this week. So it was big to get this win, keeps the Phillies in first place as they head into an off day. And then they open a four-game series with the Marlins at home, which the Marlins have been tough on the Phillies so far this year. But in the second game, we saw Rhys Hoskins with a couple of big hits again. He just continues to roll. We saw Carlos Santana come through with a huge insurance run late in the game, and we see Jake Arrieta for the second straight week against a quality opponent shove. And he shoved seven innings, one run allowed against the Red Sox in Boston. This is why they signed him. And it's not just because he has a good game occasionally. It's what we saw from Jake Arrieta in the second half last year. When his mechanics click, Paul, that's when he's able to command the baseball. And because he throws across his body, a lot of times those, you know, his mechanics can get a little off and he can miss off the plate. He can miss high and low and he can never get it right all game. But when he can get his mechanics locked in, he can go on a 2-month spree where he pitches like this. And that's why he's valuable. That's why the Phillies signed him, in the hopes that you can get him locked in for a situation for a stretch like this. And he, along with Aaron Nola, can help carry this team forward over August and September. So a huge outing by Jake Arrieta here on Tuesday night to give the Phillies the split.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. I think the big point, and I think this every time I watch Arrieta start anymore, is that maybe he's not his Cy Young self anymore, but that's okay. Because I look at this guy's stuff when he throws, and the center field camera angle has been a blessing to modern baseball fans everywhere for this very reason. I look at the way his fastball moves. The guy could throw as fast as Jamie Moyer did at the end of his career, for all I care. If his stuff keeps moving like that, he's going to be hard to hit the whole time he's with the Phillies.
Yeah.
His pitch, his two-seamer especially, that thing has so much run on it. Like, I can understand it would be a little difficult to command at times. He didn't walk anybody tonight. He struck out seven guys in seven innings. He induced enough weak contact that, you know, that wasn't a big deal. Maybe he struggled with it at times this year. Maybe he's, you know, adjusting on the fly to slightly diminished velocity and learning how to pitch a little bit differently and this, that, anyway. Maybe that's happening. I don't really know. The fact of the matter is I look at this guy and I look at his stuff and what he throws and the dip on his curveball. That curveball is still really sharp. And the way all of this stuff moves, I look at it, I'm like, this guy is really set up well to keep pitching well for the next couple of years, right? His ERA after tonight dropped to 3.32. That's pretty good. You know?
Yeah. And you look at all the free agent starting pitchers that signed in other places this offseason, really he's been the best.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can make an argument for Miles Mikolas, I think. Mikolas? I don't know
that's
how to pronounce
true.
His last name. I should
remember. I think it's Mikolas, but it's close. Yeah. I don't know.
He's been pretty close. And I think you make a good case for him. Arrieta had a bad month, and you even factor that in. The fact that he's tossing a low 3 ZRA in this, you know, run environment and has rebounded the way he has, I feel great about it, and there's really no reason not to. For all the things I just said about Aaron Nola being your game one and game seven guy, Arrieta is your follow-up. He's the guy you put out there in game two, and he's also the guy you want out there in game six to extend the series. And he's pitching like that guy right now, which feels really good.
Yeah, I was asked on the WIP morning show last week. It was before the start against the Dodgers, when I think it was against the first start out of the gates here in the second half when he really struggled. And at the time, you know, it certainly seemed as though his season was trending in a disappointing direction. And I was asked, you know, is his season disappointing so far? And I did say yes, because it sure felt that way. But I had to be reminded that he's the type of guy who can get himself locked in. And this is why, you know, these last two starts against quality opponents, when Jake Arrieta is on his game, there are few better in baseball than Jake Arrieta. And I don't think guys like Lance Lynn, guys like Alex Cobb, the other guys who we were talking about, and Yu Darvish has been hurt for the longest time this year. None of those guys really have had that ability this year to kind of lock it in like Jake Arrieta has at times. You know, he's like a lot of the Phillies hitters. He's streaky. I think it's, you know, the Phillies, you know, you got like Reese and Odubel with the big leg kicks, and they get into funky streaks. I think Jake Arrieta is kind of the pitching version of that. So anyway, well, it's been a fun trade deadline for the Phillies this year. I mean, it was so nice to be buyers once again. Paul, I appreciate you joining me on the show to break it all down, man. Thanks so much. I appreciate it, buddy.
John, always a pleasure. Always so much fun.
And of course, read Paul's work at The Good Fight. Paul does some of the best writing for us on that website. You can follow him on Twitter at Paul_Boyer. And if you follow The Good Fight's Twitter feed at The Good Fight, that's Paul too. So make sure to give both those Twitter feeds a follow. Real quick, my stat of the week. This is a trade deadline stat. The Rays payroll commitments. The Tampa Bay Rays sold a lot of guys this week. Their payroll commitments for next year now stand at around $10 million. That's $8.167 million for Kevin Kiermaier and $2 million that they're still paying for Evan Longoria, who's not even on the team anymore. Everyone else in the organization is either in arbitration or pre-arbitration. Talk about cost-cutting. The Tampa Bay Rays are doing a master's class on that right now. That'll do it for episode number 202 of Hittin' Season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next week right here on Hittin' Season.